Some of the things plants need to be happy are the same things you need to be happy. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau. We're talking about caring for indoor plants today and looking at what they can bring to our lives. Our guest is Christopher Griffin. He is the author of the book You Grow Girl, Plant Queen's Lush Guide to Growing Your Garden. And you may know him from his very popular Instagram account, Plant Queen. Do your plants help keep you happy and healthy? Are you having problems with any of them? Well, join in with your questions and comments. Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Christopher, it's so good to see your smiling face.
Hey, Jill. So good to be here. I am loving the fact that your voice is so soothing.
Oh, thank you. Oh, don't fall asleep. We appreciate that. You bet. We bet. And I've been looking forward to talking with you because I loved your book. It's beautiful, too. So that's kind of double whammy.
Thank you.
You bet. So you dedicated your book, let's start right at the very beginning, to your grandmother. And then also on that page, you have a quote from Maya Angelou. So is there a connection between the two?
Yeah. So my grandmother was the original plant queen in my life. She grew up in Clayton, Georgia, on my great grandmother's farm, her mother's farm. They grew food, they had animals, it was like a family farm. And so my great grandmother, you know, really passed on the legacy that is gardening, that is farming, to my grandmother. And then she passed that on to me when she had settled in Philadelphia, was raised in the family, my mother, my uncle. And when I was brought into the world, she kind of took me under her wing and literally invited me into her garden and was teaching me all the lessons, you know, the lush lessons that her mother had taught her. And so everything that I've done throughout this plant queen journey has been dedicated to her. So it was really important that, you know, the book be in honor of her memory and all that she taught me. And then the Maya Angelou quote was a quote that I stumbled upon a few years ago. And it kind of just summed up my, you know, plant queen experience, you know, really taking something, having a lot of fun with it, thriving, experiencing joy and happiness and putting a little glitter, a little pizzazz on it, you know?
I always have glitter. So can you, you know? Do you know it by heart? Can you read the quote? Because I'm sure people are like...
Oh, actually, I have my book actually with me.
I have mine too.
Come on. But the quote says, begin quote, "My mission in life is not merely to survive, but to thrive. And to do so with some passion, some compassion, some humor, and some style." And so I love some humor, love some fashion, love some style. So I was like, this is the perfect quote to begin the book.
I thought so, too. I remarked on that right away when I read it. And it's a great quote. I hadn't heard it before. So I'm glad you put it in there. tell us about your very first plant, that little pothos.
Oh, yes. I got my very first plant the summer of 2016. I was in a place in my life where I had been working full time for 2 years. I went to undergrad, went to grad school right after. So I had been in school my entire life. And so this was like the first 2 years of full time work. And I was searching for like a new adventure. I was searching for something new, something to begin. And so I was like, well, you know what? I had just moved into a wonderful apartment with some roommates. The sunlight was amazing, high ceilings. And I was like, I'm going to do something with the space. And so I hopped on over to a little hardware store, and there was this struggling little pothos. And I was like, you know what? If I can bring this queen back to life, then I think I got something on my hands here. And so I brought that struggling plant into my home. I still have her today, 6 years later. She started off as a couple leaves. She's now over 9 feet long.
Oh, wow.
Yes, she's over 9 feet long. The longest reigning green little queen in my plant fam. It kind of just jump started this adventure of me exploring all the local plant shops in the Brooklyn area. Bringing plants into my home. So it started with that one plant 6 years ago. I now have over 225 plants in my
You're
apartment.
not a little obsessed or anything, are you?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so.
So you took this little plant home and started all this up, and now you've written a book about caring for plants. I mean, did you see this 6 years ago when you started this?
No. If you would have stopped me in that hardware store and been like, girl, you gonna write a book in a few years, I would have walked away. But yeah, no, the true intention, behind, I think, the whole social media presence really was to just document the joy I was experiencing and the things that I was learning. So, like, as an educator, that's my profession. A lot of throughout the years, my work has been focused on making information that I'm taking in and learning accessible to my students, right? I'm a college counselor. So, like, in my undergrad, through my undergrad experience, I started a pre-summer mentorship, pre-college mentorship program. When I went to grad school, I was working for one of the cultural centers at NYU, graduated, and did work as a college counselor. So, like, a lot of my work has been like taking information and making it accessible, making it fun, and encouraging folks to have a desire to learn and be curious just for the sake of learning. And so that's really what, Plant Queen was and still is. But I think also, representation and diversity in horticultural spaces is really important. And so, as a Black queer non-binary person, it was also just important for me to put my story, my body, my being into the mix as well. Showing folks that, no matter how you identify, folks can have connections to nature in profound ways. And so, yeah, it was like a mix of all that, just wanting my educator piece, also wanting to share my identities and my stories, as I've been doing LGBTQ plus work since high school. So it was like a mix of a bunch of different passions that I brought together in a fun way. And I've kind of like culminated all of that into this book. So I'm excited for people to, experience it, to read it, and to have fun with it all.
Yeah, for sure. And it is a good read. Lots of great information, and we'll kind of go through it a little bit just to kind of share some of that with listeners also. So if you have a question, you can give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. We did get an email, so let's get to that. Mark in New Glarus wrote that simplifying, he's trying to has simplified his indoor watering to every Monday, every kind of plant from succulents to flowers to his lime tree, which he named Larry Mueller, who usually does this show. Are there any plant types that wouldn't grow well with weekly watering?
Ooh. So, I think that it really depends on your space, right? So I encourage folks to always do an environmental assessment of the space that you're trying to bring nature into, right? So that you kind of know the scene that you're going to bring your queens into, And so, so let's say that let's say this home has south-facing windows, right? That means that you're going to get a lot of direct light, now, which means that the soil is going to dry up a little bit quicker. What's the climate? What's the temperature? If it's higher temperatures and less humidity, then you may need to water more often, right? So I encourage folks to really, it sounds like he has a routine, which is great. That's one of the best things that you can do as a plant parent, is like have a watering routine. So he's already off to a great start. Now, some plants that may not necessarily need watering every single week. I have my plants down to every 7 to 14 days I'm watering them. It depends on, like the weather and humidity and all that stuff. But right at the top of my head, I'm thinking of succulents and cacti, right? Those are plants that could go without water for like 2, 3 weeks, even a month, during like the winter, right? I'm thinking of the snake plant, one of my favorite plants.
Me too. I love
Very
it.
easy to care for, right?
Yeah,
I
love
love the
my
snake
snake
plant.
plants.
Hello. Thinking of the snake plant, thinking of the ZZ plant, because they have like this these thick root systems that hold a lot of water. So even if the soil is dry, they still have water within their roots. So yeah, I think there are obviously a number of plants that probably doesn't that don't require weekly watering. But my go-to for folks is to test the soil moisture before they water plants, right? So that's as easy as placing your finger 2 inches into the soil and feeling that soil. If it's dry, she probably needs water. If not, then leave her alone. And if the pot is too large, right? Because sometimes you have like large plants, and sometimes putting your finger in 2 inches is not going to be enough for you to, test the soil near the root. You may want to get a soil probe, which is like this little stick with these grooves in it. And as you put it into the soil, you twist it around, you turn it out, it takes soil out with it. So you're able to test the soil at different levels of the planter. So I encourage folks to really test the soil moisture. It's really helpful when, not trying to overwater or underwater your plants.
That's really good advice because you can certainly, watering will kill them quickly. So if you don't have it right, they will be gone. We're talking about growing happy indoor plants with Christopher Griffin. He's the author of the book, The You Grow Girl, Plant Queen's Lush Guide to Growing Your Garden. Joining the conversation by calling 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Our on-air producer today is Courtney Everett, and Lee Rayburn is our technical director. This is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Join us every Friday or listen again on Saturday mornings at 6. And you can also hear us online where you can listen anytime. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, Joel Carson will be back to help you with your straw bale gardening. Right now, we're talking about indoor plants. And let's go right to the phone. Gianni in Montello is with us. Hi, Gianni. How are you?
Okay, we're getting a little bit of flurries up here. But listen, I have three Christmas cacti. They're about 50 years old, and they are in pots approximately 12 by 12. I'm wondering if I should transplant them. They're getting quite large. Now, they seem to be very healthy, but I'm wondering, should I prune them or transplant them? I'm a little reluctant because, I don't want to stress them. I mean, they're doing well, but how long can they stay in these pots?
Ooh, that is a very good question. I love the Christmas cactus. So I think it really depends on you, right? So repotting is not only switching the planter, right, the vessel that the plant is in. Repotting is also about changing the soil, right? So I would encourage you is basically look and see how the roots are doing, right? So even if you just like pop the plant out and see if the roots are kind of circling that pot, then that kind of means that they have nowhere to go. So eventually they're going to like kind of suffocate each other. And so I would encourage you to just like do an assessment of the root situation. If the roots seem like they still have room to grow, then that's fantastic. And I would just encourage you to change the soil, right? Because when you change the soil mixture, you're providing that plant with new nutrients. Typically it's NPK. So phosphorus, phosphorus, nitrogen, and potassium are the three main nutrients. So yeah, do an assessment of the roots. If it looks like they're about to be root bound or they're already root bound, you may want to move to a larger pot. If they look like they still have a lot of room in that planter, I would just change the soil so that you're giving her your plants fresh nutrients for them to continue serving those lush looks.
And
Yes.
just, yep. Gianna, did
Thank
you have,
you.
okay, great. And just to follow up with that, if we do change to a bigger pot, not too big, right?
Yes, not too big. So, come on, Jill. I see you, Jill. So yeah, so typically I would go maybe the max I would go is like 2 inches larger. Because the thing you don't want to do is give the plant so much room that the roots aren't able to touch all parts of the soil, right? And so what basically happens is that if you put, imagine putting a small plant with a small root system into a big batch of soil, right? You water that soil, all that moisture is going to sit there because the roots ain't sucking it up because they can't touch that part of the soil, which leads to root rot, which leads to mold. And then your green girl is going to go to that little botanical garden in the sky. And we do not want that to happen to you. Okay.
We do not. No, that's a great explanation. I think that's one of the best that I've heard. So thank you for that.
Of course.
Now you wrote this book, right in the book that through caring for your plants, you learned how to take care, better care of yourself. Tell us how that worked out.
Yeah. So there was a particular day when I think I had just reached about maybe 25 to 30-ish plants in my apartment. And this is while I was still living with roommates. God bless my roommates because they know that they were going through it with me. My roommates were gone. It was a Sunday and I had designated Sundays as like my plant care day. So I realized, as I was like watering my plants and like tending to them, like my back was really hurting and I was just like trying to like go through it. Like, I just need to water these plants. Let's get it done. And I was like, wait a minute. Like, I'm putting so much care and intention into these plants. Why am I not doing that for myself? Right. Am I drinking water? Am I letting the sun touch my body? Am I feeding myself the necessary nutrients for my root to continue to grow, right? So, plant care has really become a reflective mirror of the various ways that I can better care for myself, the time and patience I need to give myself, the intentionality behind caring for myself, reading the signs, paying attention to the signs that my own body is going through, right? So all the things that I do for my plants, I was like, I need to be doing this for myself, right? That was a particular day and my mom had called me and we kind of just had like this FaceTiming date where I was showing her my plant, she was showing me her plant. And it was like, I remember that moment where it really clicked into my head. The two-way street that, you know, my plant parent journey had, you know, provided for me. So
got a frog. So you've got this really successful Instagram account. So what is it? Over 350,000 followers? Wow. That must be blowing your mind. How surprised are you that so many people care about plants?
I'm not surprised that folks, I love that folks care about plants and care about nature and care about our planet. I think it was the timing of when, it kind of took off. I had just, so it took off around like the spring and summer of 2020, right? So we were in the midst of the pandemic. I had just moved into a new apartment, the apartment that I'm in now, but I had just moved into the apartment. So it was like a blank canvas. And I was like, oh my goodness, I can just like create and decorate and green up. And I kind of took folks on the journey. But I wasn't expecting that many people to follow me on the journey.
Well, you have to look at your photographs are amazing, though. So they're beautiful to look at. So even if I think you're probably not into plants, you probably just want to see what you're up to next.
it's honestly been a lot of fun. I've been able to connect with so many amazing people from so many different walks of life and so many different stories. And honestly have built like a beautiful community of folks in person, online. And it's really been a wonderful experience.
So where did the book come from? Did someone approach you and say, hey, let's put this stuff in a book?
Yeah. So my publisher, HarperCollins, reached out to me. I believe it was the spring of 2020, spring last summer of 2020. And yeah, it it was, I don't know. I can't really explain the emotion. But I was like, me? Y'all, really? Okay. All right. And so, you know, I thought of, in that moment, and with everything that I was doing and understanding that representation and diversity in horticultural spaces was really important, and different voices and, you know, in these spaces is important. There's a quote by Toni Morrison. It goes something like, if there's a book you really want to read that hasn't been written yet, then you must write it, right? And so I was like, you know what? Like, I need to write this book. And even though I was, you know, intimidated by the process, it was such a fun process. Like, I had a blast writing this book. And I had 4 months to do it. I had 4 months to write the book and to shoot the photos in the book with my my good friend Phoebe. And yeah, so we took those 4 months, the winter of 2020. Yeah, we did it. We did it.
That's amazing. 4 months is not a lot of time to write a book.
It's not. It's not.
Oh, we've got another call here from Carol in Crandon. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Thank you. I have two questions. My first one is, I have 3 African violets, and I always water them sparingly, you know, from the bottom, you know, so no water touches their leaves. Recently, in the last month or two, some of the outer leaves are beginning to be rimmed with kind of a dull yellow or gold color, and I've never had that problem before, so I wonder if you can advise me what may be causing that and what I can do for it.
No, I love that question. Thank you for that question, Carol. So what I would encourage you to do, so that could, it could be actually a couple reasons, right? So I love that you're bottom watering. I think bottom watering is fantastic because you're kind of like letting the plant decide how much water they want to take up. So fantastic job with bottom watering. Carol, I do have a clarifying question for you, though. Is it the bottom leaves that are kind of beginning to yellow, or is it the top leaves?
It seems like it's more the top leaves, but it's on the outer leaves of the plant. It's not on the inner leaves.
Okay, okay. So what it could be, so I always encourage, and this is, you know, I may sound repetitive, but I encourage you to take a look at the root system, right? It could be that the, because if it's like newer leaves, then that makes me think that there may be something with the root system, going on with the root system, right? Mm-hmm. Have you been fertilizing the violets, the African violets, Carol?
I usually do once or twice a year.
Okay, okay. And that's fair, that's fair. So what I would encourage you to do is to take a look at the root system, actually. If it's brittle and, you know, the roots kind of like break off, then maybe a little bit more water will be helpful. Or if you find that the root system is like mushy and maybe moldy, maybe it could be an overwatering situation. So that's one thing. The second thing when it comes to like yellowing leaves, it could be a lack of sunlight. Maybe they just need more sunlight. What kind of sunlight situation do you have them in?
They get a lot of light.
Is it direct light, okay, Carol, or is it like just bright light, indirect?
One is very light. I mean, a lot of light, and one is probably moderate light.
Okay, and are they having the same issue? Are you noticing the same issue with both of them?
The one that has bright light has less of the yellowing, and the other one that's moderate light has more yellowing.
Yeah, so I would get that. I would give them more sunlight. I think that's probably a bit of it. And where you are, is the season beginning to change?
Yes, I'm in northern Wisconsin, so.
Okay. Yeah, so I think also sometimes, sometimes like yellowing leaves aren't necessarily a bad thing, right? Sometimes the plant is letting go of some of those leaves in order to grow in new ways, right? So I encourage folks, I have friends who call me, they're like, girl, my leaves are yellowing, like, what's happening? I'm like, child, she just let the leaf go, it's fine. I think for you, Carol, if you give that plant a little bit more sunlight and check that root system, it could be a repotting situation. Maybe they need to be repotted. They maybe need more room to grow. So I think it could be like a combination of things, but more sunlight, checking the root system, and potentially doing like a repotting situation may be helpful for you.
I was listening to information that you had given a previous caller about taking care of Christmas cacti. And I have an older Christmas cacti. I'm not sure how old it is, but I know it was given to me. It's pretty old. And in the last 2 years, I've noticed that a lot of its petals or leaves are drooping, and it's having few flowers. So I wonder what could be causing both of those conditions.
So for that, I would encourage you to make sure you have that plant on a fertilizing schedule, right? Because I think with older plants, sometimes we just let them sit there in the same soil, and we're like, oh, they're fine. They've been that way for so long. And it's like, actually, you need to like repot that plant and give her some fresh soil. She may not need a new pot, but she may need some new soil, right? Because when we water our plants with like tap water, right, which is, you know, typically the most accessible water that folks have, there are minerals and salts in that tap water that build up over time, which could be harmful for our plant. So for that plant, I would look at fertilizing.
Would you fertilize that plant?
Yeah. So depending on the formula that you're using, I tend to do a mix of compost and this is like, you can find like prepackaged compost fertilizer, really helpful. I tend to put that in my soil mixtures whenever I repot. So they have like a little reserve bank of like fertilizers that are being broken down by the microorganisms in the soil. A diluted water soluble fertilizer, you could probably do every watering, right? So based on your water schedule. But I would just look at the directions on the fertilizer packet, because it'll tell you how often to apply that fertilizer.
Okay, that's helpful. I have a third question. I have a peace lily that is in with two other plants and a planter from a friend's memorial service. And I noticed the peace lily is often droopy, and I don't want to overwater it. But then when I put a little extra water in, you know, by the next day, it perks up, but it seems to be going through this cycle. Should I be transplanting it? It doesn't seem to. I've taken one plant out of there that I felt was getting smaller to, you know, give the other two plants more room. And I wonder what I can do, since it seems to be going through this droopy period. And then
thanks, Carol. I think we got the idea here. Christopher?
Yeah. So, Carol, I think for this one, what you want to do, you may want to change the composition of the soil, right? It seems like the soil may be drying out really quickly and not retaining that moisture for the peace lily. And so I would probably just change the soil component so that it's a little, it retains water a little bit more so that the plant has more time to suck up more of that moisture through the root so that she can stay serving those, that lusciousness for you.
Yeah. And peace lilies are famous for getting droopy really fast when they need water, right?
They are. Yeah. And, you know, I was curious, cause I'm just a plant nerd in that way, and I do like my own little research. And, you know, if folks were to look at the anatomy of the plant, because they're like, oh my God, is it dying? It's like, no, it's just like going through its natural process because the plant cells are like balloons. And when you water them, the roots are, you know, taking in that water and the cells are being filled with water. And so they inflate, right? Which makes them stand erect and their leaves stand upright. So, yeah.
Just like water is, drinking water is good for your skin, right? Same thing.
Exactly. Stay hydrated, y'all.
That's right. Our guest is Christopher Griffin. He's the author of the book, You Grow Girl, Plant Queen's Lush Guide to Growing Your Garden. Do you have a question about an indoor plant? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Or if you'd like, send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's go back to the phones. We've got Anna Lisa in Green Bay with a question. Hi, Annalisa.
Hi. This is a question I've had for a while. I'm just wondering what your opinion is about all these different kinds of plant food. You know, I see orchid food, cactus food, African violet food, and I mean, how different are they really? And or is there one kind? I mean, I don't have that many plants, so having all these different kinds of food is kind of a lot for me. So I just wanted to know your opinion about that. Thank you.
Yeah, I love that question. Thank you for that question. So, you know, when it comes to fertilizers, the main thing that you really want to look at is the formula of the fertilizers, right? NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, right? So those are the three main ingredients that plants really enjoy. And then there's like some, there's like smaller secondary ingredients that are typically in fertilizers, but those are the main three. And the only difference between, you know, cactus fertilizer, African violet fertilizer, and all these different variations is different percentages of those three main ingredients, right? So there are some nutrients that really help with the green leaves. There are some that nutrients that are helpful with flowering, right? There are nutrients that are helpful with the root system, right? And so that's what I tend to use the same fertilizer, and it's a compost local base fertilizer that I use that I kind of just mix in with the soil whenever I do a repotting situation. It's really just capitalism. I think, you know, folks are just, they try to come up with many different options for you to buy in terms of fertilizers. But it's really all the same. The percentages may be a little different. So if you're like, I really want this particular plant to, flower, then you may be looking at a very particular type of nutrient for that particular plant so that you can reach that goal. I wouldn't stress too much about it. You could probably use a very general fertilizer for all of your plants, and they would probably do just as fine. That's the reason that there's so many different kinds, because they're just trying to help you match the percentage to what that plant may necessarily enjoy.
Okay, thank you, Annalisa, for that question. And we've got another one from Maggie that's in Milwaukee that's similar. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks. What's your question today?
I save rainwater and only water my plants with rainwater. Is there...
I love that.
Okay, but what about all the pollution and everything? Is any of that going to build up and hurt my plants? I've always done it. The other part of the question is, I used to always mix the water-soluble plant food in the water. But this year, I tried a new thing. I didn't fertilize at all. And my Christmas cactus bloom, all my everything bloomed. Everything looks wonderful. So is it just the rainwater that I need? And I don't need to fertilize as long as I'm using the rainwater?
Yeah, no, that's a, I love that you're able to collect rainwater. I think actually in some states it's illegal to collect rainwater, which is mind baffling to me. Yeah, I was like doing research and I'm on water for the book, and it was like, yeah, you can't collect rainwater in certain states. So I was like, okay, that's interesting. But Maggie, I love that you're collecting rainwater. I also love that you are being conscious of the pollution, because acid rain is very, very real in certain parts of the world. And so what I encourage you to do, and I'm not sure what's the necessary process to do this, but I would test your rainwater, or just do some research on the composition of the rainwater in your area. And I think you may be able to do that with like a quick Google search, right? Just looking to see what is in that rainwater. Now, it seems like the rainwater right now is doing great for your plants, because you have your cactus, your Christmas cactus in bloom. And I love how everyone had Christmas cactus. This is amazing.
It's a trend.
I love this trend right now. I love this trend. I have a Christmas cactus too, so this is lovely.
So do I.
Like I'm part of the group. But Maggie, I think when it comes to fertilizing, so obviously there may be some nutrients in the rainwater, right? So love that. But also, I think when we are providing our plants with nutrients, the impact is not going to be immediate, right? And so what you could be seeing is the effect of your previous fertilizing now impacting your plant, right?
So I'm way out of that. I'm way out of that time.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah.
How long have you not been fertilizing directly?
So I never fertilized all summer, because I take them all outside in the summertime. I never fertilized any throughout the summer, through all this winter. I mean,
so has it been a year, Maggie, or has it been less?
Oh, yeah, easily.
Okay. A year.
Okay, wow. And was this the first time you placed them outside?
Oh, no. Everything gets drug outside. I love my plants. Everything goes outside depending how they tolerate it. And, you know, if it, like, the more tender people, I bring them in if there's going to be a storm or something. Yeah, I waste a lot of time on plants.
Well, you know, I think, fertilizing our plants is very important. I think also, you know, depending on the plant's life cycle, right, they could be at that particular point where, you know, blooming is just really easy for them. The environment is really well for them. You're caring for them and providing excellent care. So there could be a combination of a bunch of different things that are happening that get them to bloom in that way. So I think the best thing for you to do is to keep doing what you're doing and be consistent with it, because it seems like your green girls are very happy.
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Our guest on Garden Talk today is Christopher Griffin. He is the author of the book, You Grow Girl, Plant Queen's Lush Guide to Growing Your Garden. Join in with your questions at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau. Join us on Monday, and we'll be talking about osteoarthritis in hands and wrists with our physical therapist. That's Monday here on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're talking about plants, inside plants. And just as an FYI, we were talking about the rainwater, and our wonderful board op, Lee Rayburn, dug into the City of Milwaukee's website, and it says that in Wisconsin, there are no laws preventing rainwater harvesting, but there are some rules that control what you can and cannot do with the collected water. I had no idea. So.
Isn't that wild?
It just never even occurred to me. It's free. It's coming down. Why can't I take it? Right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that blew my mind. In the book, I go through a chapter about water, and that was the chapter I was worried the most about because it was the thing I knew least about, and I felt like that was a problem. And so, yeah, dived into it and was discovering some of those things. And I was like, this is baffling to me.
Me too. Well, I'm sure there's a good reason somewhere.
I hope so.
Yeah. Maybe in drought areas. I'm sure maybe that's the problem. So
let's
go back to the phones. Now we've got Bob in Oshkosh with a question. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I had a call about my terrarium. So, first of all, I wanted to say I listen to a lot of NPR, and Garden Talk is my favorite.
Thank you, Bob. We appreciate that.
I got a terrarium just because I wanted to have one of those macrame hanging things, and I wanted to save space. But I don't have anything to put in it yet because I have to get a kit. I was wondering if I can go and get that stuff, you know, get the rocks, get the sand, use some planting, some potting soil, or do I have to buy one of those kits to make sure everything is sterile?
Bob, I love that you have a little project before you. I'm so excited for you because creating terrariums are really, really fun. You do not have to get a kit. I would actually, encourage you not to go the kit route because then you can kind of just like bring together all the things you want to see in the terrarium. I've seen people do orchid terrariums. I've seen them do more tropical terrariums. I've seen them do desert terrariums with like succulents. And so you can get all of that, at your local plant shop. I would just like go in, talk to the folks who are working there, say, hey, I'm looking to build a terrarium. What are the things that I need? And they should be able to help you with a little guidance in terms of what you want to see. You do not have to get a kit. I would encourage you to just go to your local plant shop, support your local businesses, and purchase your items there.
Absolutely. Good luck with that, Bob. Next, we have Lee Brown in Southwest Wisconsin. Hi, Lee.
Hello. I have someone had told me that you could put club soda on your plants. It was good for them. Is that something you would do or not?
Club soda.
And is this to wipe the leaves off?
No, they just said use it for fertilizer. So,
Lee, I haven't heard that one. I've seen situations where folks have cleaned their toilets with club soda. I've seen that. The only thing, I haven't heard club soda. I've heard like mixing like various solutions with like peroxide to get rid of different pests. But I haven't heard the club soda one. I haven't heard the club soda one.
I haven't either. I guess like all you could do is experiment with it, right? Have two plants.
You could experiment. But I'm not sure if there's any nutrient that plants enjoy from club soda. So I could see maybe if the fizzleness and the bubbles, like creating air pockets in the soil, that could be helpful in that way. But I couldn't see nutrients coming from club soda.
Yeah, I question that one, Lee. But thanks for sharing that with us. If anybody's had experience with us, give us a call. Or again, if you have questions about plants,
I would love to hear that.
Yeah, 800-642-1234. You know, we haven't had a chance to actually talk about what you have in your book, Christopher. So why don't we kind of go over that a little bit? What can people expect when they pick the book up and open it up?
Yeah, so I love colors, I love patterns, I love brightness, I love vibrancy, so they can expect all of that in this book. And while, I think it may be fun for folks to kind of just flip through and look at all the photos, I think that's definitely something folks should do. But In the book, I'm a storyteller. So I love telling stories. I think there's a lot of learning that can happen through storytelling. And so while folks can definitely just, you know, look at the index or the table of contents and, you know, go exactly to what they need to for their plant fam, I would encourage folks to read it from front to back as they would any other book. Because I kind of go through my own journey, starting with the story of my grandmother, and then taking folks through different tutorials as it relates to that particular story, how to start your journey, how to propagate, how to water. And it kind of just takes you through this nice little adventure with an interweaving of storytelling, tutorials, and then little activities that you can engage your body in. So there's like a breathing exercise in here that I use often to calm my own stress and anxiety. There's a little playlist of some of my favorite songs in here. I encourage folks to like blast music when they are, you know, tending to their garden. It is one of the best things. So yeah, and all the outfits that I wore inside the book, the designer that I'm wearing on the cover is Christopher John Rogers, an amazing up-and-coming designer. But in the rest of the book, most of the clothes that I'm wearing are thrifted, are secondhand clothes, which is a wonderfully sustainable way to, you know, just navigate the fashion world. Like secondhand clothing is a wonderful way. So a lot of intentionality went into the book. Around, you know, the different ways that I'm practicing being better for the planet. And honestly, this journey started with taking in that Marble Queen pothos. So, yeah, that's a little bit what folks can expect.
Yeah, and so much information, too. And it's done in a very easy way for people who are not plant people or haven't been plant people to understand how it all works. So, yeah, so great job on that. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Dennis in Two Rivers who has a question for us. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. As far as Milwaukee and other places, if the rainwater isn't controlled, it can get into sump pumps and basements, and flooded basements, and end up overwhelming sewer systems. And with Milwaukee and other places, it's ended up in Lake Michigan or in rivers.
Okay.
Oh, that
we need to control what happens with rainwater.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, that's
one reason. That is useful information. I did not know that.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis. Much appreciated. Let's go to Dick in Cumberland. Hi, Dick.
Hi. I have a aloe plant that's been growing in a terrarium for many years. Finally, it's blossomed. The shoots with the flowers are 2 to 3 feet tall. They're growing out of the terrarium. I'm not sure why they're that tall, but they continue to grow. Did I overwater it or over-fertilize it? It's a house plant facing the south window. Gets plenty of sun that way. I'm not sure what to do with it other than just sit back and enjoy it.
No, that sounds beautiful. It sounds like your plant is serving some lush look and new growth realness. I wouldn't do anything. I would sit back and enjoy the bloom and enjoy the growth. If you find that, you know, after the flowers begin to wilt, that the stalk of the plant is still pretty tall and outgrowing the terrarium, you may want to place that plant in a new terrarium to give, you know, that plant some more room to grow. But other than that, it seems like your green girl is really enjoying all the care that you're giving her. So congratulations on that. She sounds beautiful.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's very rare to get an aloe plant to bloom. So congratulations,
yes,
Dick,
yes,
on that one.
Congratulations.
And that's
Should
a pretty easy.
Should those stalks be cut back?
I'm sorry, what?
Should those stalks be cut back after they're done blooming, or should I just leave them?
I wouldn't cut it back. I would just like let the plant go through its natural process. Like let it go through its natural process. Aloe plants blooming is, it can be rare, especially indoors, right? So like let that plant like do its thing and don't disrupt its process.
I think kind of like outdoor, like bulb plants and things, you got to let that flower just die on its own and get those nutrients back in, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Circle of life. Come on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So good luck with that, Dick, and congratulations on that. So we've been talking with Christopher Griffin, and he is the author of the book, You Grow Girl, Plant Queen's Lush Guide to Growing Your Garden. And we do have a link to that on our program note. So you can go to WPR.org/Larry, see about this program, and you can see where you can pick up the plant. And I highly recommend it. It's a great book to read, and it's also a great book to gift to someone, isn't it?
Yes. If someone is, you know, looking to, you know, strut into plant parenthood and want to do it in a very fun, accessible way, then the book is a wonderful gift. And I encourage folks to pair it with a plant as well. Give them a plant and, the book and see how they do.
That's a really good idea. I love that. And for like a housewarming present or something, that would be really
right.
Good.
A little guide and a little lushness.
There you go. Make sure you pick out an easy plant for them though. So that,
please don't.
Nothing difficult. So, all right. Well, I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm in for Larry Mueller today. And stay with us. There's always more to come. Well, we're talking about caring for houseplants on Garden Talk today. I'm Jill Nadeau. Our guest is Christopher Griffin. He is the author of the book, You Grow Girl, Plant Queen's Lush Guide to Growing Your Garden. Do you have questions about indoor plants? Well, we'd like to help you, so give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. And we've got Christina from Glenwood City on the line. It's been waiting for a little bit. Thank you for doing that, Christina. What can we help you with?
Hi there. Thank you. Can you recommend an all-purpose natural pesticide, either homemade or to purchase?
Oh, come on. I love that question, Christina. So I encourage folks, I think the best natural pesticide that can cover a lot of different pests that, you know, our plants may experience is neem oil. So I recently had an issue with mealybugs on some of my cacti, and I don't know where they came from, but I mixed in some neem oil with a little bit of water and had sprayed those plants with the neem oil water solution, and it has really worked. I think you just have to be consistent. There's also different kinds, and I encourage you to like do a little bit of research on different kinds, but neem oil is usually the best. I've heard folks use like liquid soap mixed with water. I've heard folks use like peppers to like, there's a lot of different ways. I've heard folks use oil, like vegetable oil. So I think there's a lot of different ways. I would say neem oil is probably the best solution for you. The only thing when you're using neem oil is that you want to make sure that you take the plant away from any direct sunlight, because the neem oil paired with sunlight, the plant will experience sunburn. So you just want to make sure that you just move that plant out of any direct light, or at least when you spray it, you wipe it down. So it's less likely if you have like an outdoor plant or something like that. But neem oil is the best way to go.
Okay. Thank you, Christina, for that question. And we did get an email from John in Hubertus. He just wanted to tell us that, you know, his girlfriend used to buy plants in small pots when they were on sale, and they would always die a few months later. And he noticed that they were root bound and they needed a larger pot. And that's pretty basic problem, right?
Yeah.
And he also said that he has indoor geraniums, and he says that they can live at least 3 months without water inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think, you know, I encourage folks to really do research on the plant. And yes, it may be intimidating because you may find so much information, but really it's about knowing your space and taking what, like, little tidbits from, you know, those different websites combined with learning about their natural habitat. I think that is one of the most helpful things that folks can do. And I actually looked up the club soda thing because I was like, really interested with that. So I was like, what is that club soda thing? And apparently club soda has phosphate in it.
To make it bubbly, yeah.
Yeah, make it bubbly. And apparently our plant enjoy that. So I did not know that. So whoever, the caller with that, thank you for sharing that information because I was unaware about the, yeah, the club soda situation.
That's great. I love it. Thanks for doing that. I appreciate it. And we were talking about some problems with disease and things. I, that must have been scary when you saw those mealybugs on some of your plants.
Yeah. But, you know, honestly, I think it's just a part of the process, right? So, you know, when you're bringing nature in, you're bringing nature in.
Good point. And, good point.
Yeah, bugs, insects, pests are a part of that process. And so I think it's really just like with consistent care, with pruning, paying attention to your plant, checking in with them daily is just really, really important. So while in the past that may have been like really freaked me out, I think at this point I'm like, oh, it's just a part of the process. Let me go ahead and, you know, treat them in the ways I know I need to and be patient and hopefully it works.
So. And hopefully it doesn't spread.
please isolate. I've isolated all those queens. So they are isolated from any plants so that they do not spread. So.
Put them in lockdown.
Exactly.
Let's talk about do you make your own potting mix for your plants?
Oh, yeah.
What do you use?
I love making my own soil mixture recipe. And while folks can definitely go and buy prepackaged, similar to what was said about like so many different type of fertilizer solutions, there's so many different soil mixture components for orchids, for cacti, for succulents, for tropical, water retention, all those things. But I found that I tend to stick with a basic potting mix that has, you know, nutrients and perlite and wonderful ingredients already inside the potting mix. And I tend to mix because I tend to overwater my plant. Little plant queen confession. I tend to overwater my plant. And so I found that mixing in fir bark, which is just chips of fir from the bark of fir trees. You can find them at pet stores. Most of it's usually used as in like reptile cages, as the base of reptile cages. Always add a little bit more perlite. And fir bark and perlite are really good because it makes sure that the soil is well drained. So that when you're pouring the water, because I usually top water my plant, the water shouldn't be sitting at the top for, it should literally, as you're pouring, it should be falling through the soil, right? So it just makes sure it's aerated, that air is flowing through the soil, because as much as our plants love water, they also need air. And because, you know, in nature, we have insects that are burrowing through, worms that are burrowing through, creating air pockets and tunnels for the roots to breathe. That's not the case in, potted plants. So yeah. And then I always add like a little bit of compost in there for nutrients. I don't cook, but like that is like my kitchen time. That's like I'm mixing things and having fun and brewing some things up. So
I like that. It's exciting when you're it's like a scientific experiment again. So
it is.
We were talking about drainage. So that kind of leads me to pots. What do you put your plants in? What kind of pot? What should people look for when they're picking out a pot?
Yeah. So I encourage folks to, you know, obviously when they're bringing plants into their space, they're going to figure out kind of which plants work with them, what kind of pots work with them. And so as an overwaterer, it's really important for me to have pots that are that dry out on the quicker side, right? So most of my 225 plants are in terracotta pots. The basic pots, you see them everywhere, the orange brownish color pot. And the reason is because they're made from a porous material that allows the soil to breathe, right? So that's really helpful for an overwatering queen. They are also inexpensive, and I'm a queen on a budget, right? So oh, yeah. I like to make sure with over 225 plants, I got to make sure that I can, you know, afford these planters. So that, and then drainage. I think drainage is really, really important long-term for a plant. And so while certainly folks can do ceramic, they can do clay, they can do plastic, I've seen like concrete planters. I've seen planters made from so many different materials, marble. And while, you know, those planters are can look fabulous as decor, right? Sometimes they're not the best when it comes to the longevity of the life of a plant. Now, I know some folks who have planters without drainage. And it worked for them because they are folks that underwater their plants, right? So the only thing when it comes to pots without drainage is to make sure that you put either lava rocks or leca rocks or something at the bottom of that pot so that the roots in the soil sit above any extra water that collects at the bottom. Because if you don't, then your plant is most likely going to experience root rot. But also the thing with pots without drainage is that all those minerals and salts that are in the water that we consume or that we give to our plant is just sitting there, right? So it's just building up at the bottom. And eventually over time, that's going to be harmful for the plant. So I would just be mindful for folks who are like, I don't want to get my tabletop, you know, wet because I'm watering my plant. I want it to be nice and clean. It's an expensive table. I would encourage you to just make sure that you're repotting your plants maybe every year or every season, just to make sure that you're, you know, getting those minerals out, giving them fresh soil so that that salt buildup and mineral buildup don't burn the roots of the plant.
Okay, great. We did get an email from Anne in Milwaukee. She's looking for reasonably priced ways to keep indoor plants watered when she's away for several weeks. And some of the things she's tried so far are plant watering glass globes that you put in the pot that limited success there. Water absorbing crystals in the dirt, which was very poor success, apparently. Would any of the suggested solutions also work for outside pots in the summer?
Ooh. I mean, I think I haven't tried the glass globes or anything like that. The little, you just put water, then you stick it in the soil and it kind of just releases occasionally. I think the best thing folks can do is to get a friend to come over and water your plants for you. I have that go-to friend. I think it's a wonderful way to build the friendship, to build a relationship. Maybe they're the neighbor you want to get to know and you're not sure what the entry point is, or maybe they're the person you want to get to know. And you don't know what the entry point is. Ask them to care for your plants while you're away. I think that's a wonderful way. And so typically when I travel, I try to make sure that I give them like a deep watering before I leave, like maybe a day or two before I leave. And then I have a friend who has the keys to my apartment and she checks in on my plants for me. She's also a plant parent. So also get someone that you feel that you can trust with your plants as well. All right. And so she's a plant parent. And so, I have her come over. But my plants without me can survive for about maybe like a week and a half, 2 weeks. And they'll probably be fine with like the routine that I've created. I would encourage, you don't need a device. Just get a friend, get a person, connect with people and have them help you with your plan.
Absolutely. One thing that I've seen is actually you take like a plastic water bottle, take the cover off, open the top up, put water in, and then put it upside down in the plant, fill that with water. So it, you know, just gradually kind of pulls itself down in. So
I'm going to try.
For sure. So
I love that.
Small one for small plant, big one for big plant. So
hello.
See if it works. Do you have a question about growing green plants? Well, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email like Ann in Milwaukee did, ideas@WPR.org. So we're probably getting people inspired here to go out and buy themselves a plant, right? Awesome.
Yes, I hope so.
Yeah. What should they look for when they're picking out that plant?
Yes. So there's typically four easy steps that I tend to follow when I'm looking to green up my space, right? Or giving advice to someone to green up their space. I mentioned the first step, and that's really just doing an environmental assessment of your space, right? Look at how the sun moves throughout your apartment, throughout your house, throughout your office, right? That's going to give you an idea of where you can place the plant and how much sunlight comes into the space. It's also good for our bodies as well to know how much sunlight is coming into the space. So it's a very meditative process. So I encourage folks to like dive into that. Measure humidity and temperature. And so I have a hydrometer, and I'm showing it to the screen, but a hydrometer everywhere I go. It measures temperature and humidity level because most of the plants that we bring into our spaces are tropical plants. So they enjoy 65 to 75 degrees Fahrenheit. Humidity level is anywhere between like 40 to 55%, right? And that's like healthy. Like I think the average humidity level in the Amazon rainforest is like anywhere from 80 to 90, right? We don't want that because mold, mildew, all that stuff. So like indoors is typically like, you know, 45 to 55. When you get to the plant shop, now that you have your space ready to go, you know what you're working with, you know the scene that you're bringing your queens into, you go to the plant shop, and I encourage folks to just peruse and enjoy themselves at first, like take in the lushness, enjoy the moment, don't get caught up in your head about the process.
And the smell, and kind of, smells
and
amazing.
The smell, oh, I mean, the fresh air, the humidity, let it in, let it in. And then I encourage you to then just like point out some plants that catch your eye, right? Ones that you gravitate towards. And once we have like your select few, I would do research on them, right? In that moment. So I'm doing research in that moment because you know your space, you know the humidity levels, you know the sunlight. Now you can match that in real time with the plant, right? And then if I don't know the name of the plant, then I usually ask the folks that work there who are most likely plant parents themselves because they work in a plant shop. And so I have a conversation with them like, hey, what's the best, you know, how can I best care for this plant? And then if it kind of fits what you can provide, right, then you're about to take that queen home or several queens home. You want to make sure you get a planter that's at least 2 inches larger than the nursery pot. You are looking at those plants that you have your select plants, I would just inspect the leaves for pests, right? I would check the soil for pests, especially larger plants. I've heard horror stories of mice, roaches, centipedes, all those things being in the soil of larger plants. So you will see me digging in the soil if I'm purchasing a larger plant. People are like, what are you doing, girl? I'm like, let me be in my process, please. But make sure you inspect, you know, the plants before you bring them home. You may want to isolate them a little bit for a little bit of time just to make sure that there's no pest that you couldn't see on the leaves that may begin to grow. I encourage folks to not repot right away because plants experience transplant shock and root shock. Transplant shock is like a movement, a change in temperature, sunlight, all that stuff. So basically the moving and putting them in a different environment can shock them. So let them go through that transplant shock first. Then once you see that they kind of adjusted to your space, maybe they've oriented their leaves towards the sun, maybe they're sprouting new growth, then you can repot it and they'll go through root shock, which is changing the soil, right? So you just wanna like ease that shock and then trust yourself. Place that plant where you have selected and try not to move the plant too around too much because you want to allow them time to get adjusted to their new environment. And if you're moving them around constantly because you see a deep leaf or a yellowing leaf, they can't adapt to where they are. So I know that was a lot, but that's like a little bit of, you know, what they can get in the book. It kind of just like takes folks through that process. In a way that's really meditative. I just feel like it's just a fun process that folks can really dive into, and it doesn't have to involve any anxiety or stress.
And one of the things that you bring up too a number of times, and we kind of touched on it earlier, is patience. How yeah. important patience is.
Yeah. Plant parent patience. And that's actually a chapter in the book. So I think it's important that we be patient with, you know, the nature that we're bringing into our home. If you do experience, you know, plant fails, maybe a plant leaves you, go to a little botanical garden in the sky, that's okay. I would just take note on what could have went wrong and use that as an opportunity to learn and do better next time. Plants die. I've had plants die on me, and that is just part of the process and the journey. But I've learned from it, and now I'm able to keep alive 225 plants because I've been intentional about using those moments to learn to do better.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea. And talking about self-care, and that's a good thing too for ourselves. Be patient with yourself, right?
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. So I know you probably get this question all the time, but what plants do you suggest for someone who really is just starting? Do you have a list?
Yes, I do. This is such a good question. the first one that I would obviously recommend is the pothos. I think the pothos is such a wonderful plant. And fun little fact, in some countries, it's considered an invasive species because it's so adaptable and it grows so easily. So, also one of the reasons why it's just great indoors, because it's very adaptable, very light, flexible, meaning that you could have her in like lower light situations. You could have her in brighter light situations. Obviously, brighter light situations are better for plants, right? They tend to grow quicker in those conditions. Watering, I would say maybe every 7 to 10 days is just fine. And they're so easy to propagate. So if you're like, I want to green up the space with plants I already have, this queen is wonderful to propagate. My original pothos, I have maybe 10 other pothos plants that was born from propagating my very first plant. So definitely the pothos. They come in a bunch of different varieties. Marble queen pothos, the neon. They have like an emerald green. So indulge in pothos. They're fabulous. The second would have to be the snake plant. I love the snake plant. It's been classified by NASA as one of the best air purifying plants, and also fairly easy to propagate as well. And you do not have to water these queens often. These are queens that are used to not having a lot of water. So I water my snake plants every 2 to 3 weeks. Depending on like the seasons, I may water them a little more frequently, but 2 to 3 weeks is typically my watering schedule for them. In terms of light, they are marketed as low light plants, but I would go more brighter light. So that's a snake plant. And then lastly, to put a little pizzazz on it, I would say the Monstera Deliciosa. The Monstera Deliciosa is one of my favorite plants. She's a little trickier because she enjoys She's basically a large vine. And when we often see her, we see her as just like these big leaves, but she's a large vine. She enjoys like a nice moss pole or something to climb up. She has beautiful area roots that you want to mist occasionally. You probably want to give her a little bit more water. So I would say like every week is probably good for the Monstera Deliciosa and a lot of good sunlight. If you have like a bright window, put her in your bright window. So,
and
yeah, those plants
we're
are
running out of time, Christopher. Thank you so, so much. It's been such a fun day to talk with you. And thank you so much for being with us. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Christopher Griffin. He's the author of the book, You Grow Girl, Plant Queen's Lush Guide to Growing Your Garden. And remember, next week on Garden Talk, Joel Karsten will be back to talk about straw bale gardening.